Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
It's going fantastic. I'm tired, but it's going fantastic.
Fantastic. You are back from your trip.
I am.
You went out west. Seemed like a long trip.
It was both shorter and longer than I expected.
And there was things happening.
Constantly.
Things happening. This was not your regular run-of-the-mill trip for you.
No. And so let me start by saying this started by... Oh, do you remember what episode? So we interviewed Michael Nichols.
Right.
And so he was... he came through and he was visiting us and came through. So we interviewed him. He was on his way to Newfoundland on the way through. So he drove all the way from the West Coast. Had his car with him, and so when we interviewed him, we said, well, what trips are next? What are you doing? What's coming up? And Mike goes, well, next year, I'm going to go on a trip with some friends and my brother, and we're going to go do Bowron Provincial Park, the Bowron Canoe Circuit, and so he told us about it, and I said, well, I'd like to join you on that. So I basically invited myself, and it worked out, though.
Episode 502.
Mm-hmm. Anybody want to go back and listen to that, to Mike talk about it? And also listen to Derek shamelessly invite himself on Mike's trip.
On to Mike's trip. Because if you want to shamelessly invite yourself on somebody's trip, you'll know how.
So that, and that just as a background explainer about how this all came about, because I wouldn't normally hop on a plane and go somewhere's canoeing. It's all car driving. There's so many gems to find in Ontario with Clarny, Tobogamy, Algonquin Park, and, you know, QE2, and there's so many nice, beautiful parks. It's just, there's so much to
why
see.
Why leave the province?
Here. Exactly. Why? But this is one of those opportunities. I didn't even know this existed until Michael talked about it. And it's a really nice area. You don't think, when you tell somebody or somebody says, hey, I'm going to go canoeing in the Rocky Mountains, you're thinking, ooh, whitewater trip, tell me more. No, not a whitewater trip, flat water, but at altitude.
Right.
So it's an amazing route. So if anybody's listening, it's just pause and Google Bowron, B-O-W-R-O-N, Bowron Provincial Park in British Columbia. And you'll see it's a square series of lakes that has a bunch of mountains in the middle and a bunch of mountains on the outside. And these are all snow-capped peaks. So you see snow year-round, and if I could fly, I could have gone up and get snow for drinks. It would have been great.
Why didn't you walk?
It's too far. These are high mountain peaks.
So, the Bowron Lake Canoe Circuit, 116 kilometers, 72 miles, wilderness paddling route, British Columbia, Caribou Mountains, traversing a chain of 12 pristine lakes connecting rivers. The complete loop takes 6 to 10 days and includes roughly 11 kilometers of portages.
Mm-hmm.
Yay!
It's simple, it's straightforward. It's mm-hmm. So we saw it's not a tough route. We saw a lot of kids. We saw a lot of new people. We had two relatively new paddlers with us. One guy used to paddle a lot, and he's done some kayaking, but he hasn't done much in the last 15 years. So he sort of became a new paddler again.
Yeah,
so,
you lose your touch.
Yeah, exactly. And the other guy, which was Mike's brother, was a relatively new canoeer. He couldn't do stern, so he was always a bow paddler. And so, but. Really great group of people. So fun. Mike and the fourth, which is Tucson Pearl, they're both teachers. Mike's retired. Tucson is still teaching. And so they both teach, or they were teaching in Oliver, which is south of Penticton. And so I met like the whole time there when we weren't camping, we were bumping into other teachers here, there, and everywhere. A lot of really great people, a lot of nice people, and a lot of teachers. So of course a teacher is going to run in the circles of other teachers. So it was kind of cool that way. So it was really cool. It was good to get out there and get back into BC. It's a unique area. So I didn't have really any expectations of what I was going to see when I got out there, but
mountains.
Well, yes. So
mountains and water.
I've been in mountains before, but I've never been in the Okanagan Valley. It's like a desert climate there,
mm-hmm.
which makes sense why everything's gone to vineyards, right? So this was a, this area is like a huge producer of, back in the day, like cantaloupe, melons and apples and pears and peaches. And so there's a town called Peachland. And so they have Peach Fest in Penticton every year for a whole week. So it's just, I had to Google it, and because Mike didn't even know. He says, I don't know how many vineyards are here. He took us on a ride, and it was like every kilometer, vineyard, 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 vineyard. It was like, whoa, but it's all vineyards, and these things are just covering the north-facing slopes of off Penticton, right? So I had to Google it. What is it? It's there's 80 wineries within a 20-minute drive of Penticton, and there's more than 170 wineries across the broader South Okanagan region.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're giving the Niagara region a run for the money.
Oh, yeah. Well, the we did a tasting at one winery. We were off to do something else, and there at the time, there was a lot of stuff going on. So there wasn't too many people on the road because of the wildfires going on. So we stopped in at one winery, and the sommelier guy there, he's from the Niagara region.
Really?
And he was headhunted to come out and work at this winery where we stopped at. Really nice guy. And so it was interesting to hear him talk about, you know, he was, you know, grew up in whatever in Ontario, and he's learned his craft there. And so it was kind of interesting, but to get the different perspective of the regions for wine and whatever, it was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting. But yeah, it's a very cool area. So basically I flew out into the Kelowna Airport. Mike picked me up, and I was on the same plane as his brother. His brother was flying through from Newfoundland, and it was hot. It was like 34, 35 degrees. I said, wow, it's really hot here. He says, no, this is nice. It's cooled down, because apparently it had been like 40 plus degrees.
Ooh.
And so it was in a cooling period, so only 34 degrees. And I'm like, oh,
it's gonna be
I don't know bad. If I can handle this. But
is that plane still here?
So, exactly. And anyways, on the drive down so we drove through Peachland, Summerlin, down to Penticton. And I'm like, this is like really desert. Like, he goes, oh yeah. I said, those bushes are, do you guys get tumbleweeds there? Those are tumbleweeds.
That'd be a yes.
Yes. Those, when they die, they turn into tumbleweeds. It's just so weird. They have cactus, and it's all dry, but there's a lot of water in the area. The Lake Okanagan is right there, right?
Well, when we were in Saskatchewan, we took a drive down to North and South Dakota one year to do some camping. And and it's not something you think about, but there were cactuses.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait a minute.
What's going on here?
Because you think in Mexico, Texas, Arizona,
right
down there, right?
Yeah.
No, this is right at the Canadian border. There's cactuses. What the heck is...
Well, he said it's very mild temperatures all year round, and if they get snow, it doesn't stick around long. And so nothing really below freezing temperatures often. It's just mostly plus temperatures. So he said it's very mild and it's very nice. And once in a while, it's like, hey, look, snow. So it's a very nice, mild climate. Sounds like it'd be great spring, fall, winter, spring, but summer's hot. Holy cow. But yeah, it was just so different from what I'm used to seeing with all the scrub brush and it was very different. So they want to call it sagebrush.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sagebrush and antelope brush. So sage as in the spice.
Mm.
It's everywhere.
Really? Really?
Yeah. So it was kind of cool. You know, when I first got there, I was like, hey, Ribfest is going on. Cool. So I got to go to Ribfest, get some ribs.
Yeah, you guys posted a couple of pictures there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute. Ribfest, and you're in a bookstore pretending to read a book. I thought you guys were supposed to be doing a canoe trip. Like, when does that actually start?
Oh, it was great. So I didn't just go out to go canoeing. There was like two or three days at the front end and 4 or 5 days on the back end where we just did tour stuff.
May as well.
And did some stand-up paddleboarding.
The biggest part getting is the flight.
Yes.
The biggest cost is the flight,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is. Definitely.
So if you got a couple of days early and a couple of days, go do some stuff while you're out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because chances of you getting back out there anytime soon, right?
It was great. It was such a good vacation.
So you did some paddleboarding too.
I did some paddleboarding too. So the last time we did it was
November.
Was November 11th in Frenchman's Bay
with
what's his name? I can't remember his name. I'm bad with names. You're going to make me try to remember.
I'm going to make you try to remember it.
No, I won't be able to remember. But he's got his own paddleboard company.
And yeah, we went out paddling for the day.
But you're not going to say his name?
I'm not going to tell you what his name is.
I forget his name. You can't remember too, I bet. Hey,
no, I'm just not telling you.
Anyways, so that was, that was 8 years ago?
No, not quite 8. No, that was about four years ago.
Yeah, it feels like forever ago.
Yeah.
Anyways, I got standing up on the paddleboard again. When he first got me out, he had a couple inflatable stand-up paddleboards. I tried to stand up on it, just wasn't working. I couldn't stand up on it. And he says, "Well, take your shoes off," because I had my my water shoes on. And with bare feet on the board, I stood up, no problem. It was good. And so he's got this. Oh, his dog. His dog makes me want dogs again. What a good dog he has. Like, I heard that dog bark once the entire time.
Really?
I saw that dog once. And the only time I heard any other verbalizations was some woman with an Australian accent came up at a restaurant, and he was trying to get at her and smell her. He was sniffing, but I think he recognized the Australian accent or something. I don't know. Or she.
Farrah. His accent.
Farrah. Anyways, beautiful dog. What a nice dog. Kind of makes you think of a dingo. Nice dog.
Yeah, it's always weird not having a dog after you have one for a while.
Yeah, I haven't had a dog since I lived out on Vancouver Island back in 2000 when I moved to Ontario.
So it's been that long?
It's been that long.
Wow.
Yeah, and so Stella wanted a dog for a while, but it's like, yeah, who's going to be up in the morning to walk the dogs? Because Stella, on Saturdays, weekends and stuff, she sleeps until 9 or 10. It's like, come on. You want a dog? You're going to have to do some stuff. Anyways, she got over it. So, yeah, so what's that? Oh, Mackay Paddle Surf. So you couldn't just say it. You had to Google it and show
me. So I can show you. Now you'll never forget.
Yes. No, I'll forget.
You'll forget.
I'll forget.
So you got out and you did some paddle boarding as well.
So that was at the butt end of the trip. On the leading in, it was a busy couple of days as we got ready for the trip. Like, because I flew out, it was very hard to pack for. And so there was a lot of stuff I couldn't bring because I was on a plane. So obviously no fuel. I had some freeze-dried food, but nothing fresh. And then the day before I flew out, they announced the Caribou region, which the Bowen Provincial Park is in, was a fire ban was announced. So with a fire ban, it's like, oh, I had a couple. I was supposed to do 2 meals.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to do like early on, like first day, I was going to do a chicken meal and then a steak meal and whatever. You know, it's the thing that I usually do on Burt Reynolds' trip is just a tin, like a metal tray, and cook it over the fire. It's potatoes and vegetables and chicken or steak and whatever. It's just cook it all up and it's a big feed. It's really good. And anyways, that all changed with a fire ban because we can't have open fires.
Right.
So then it was, when we had planned it, it's like and then when there's a fire ban, it's like, well, I can't do group meals now. I have no group meals to do. And so I did have a giant package of freeze dried chili.
Right.
So that was one meal, a loaf of bread and chili. And then I helped with everybody else doing their meals, like when we caught fish and whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it really did change the aspect with the fire ban about how we were going to handle each day with meals and so on.
Well, especially if you have to do a group meal.
Yes.
Like a big cook. Yeah. You're going to need a bigger stove Or over the fire. And I've every time I've ever done group meals, it's usually over the fire.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? So.
But it worked out. It was like, you know, it was like chili and rice, and then we had chili twice. But yeah, it worked out. We did a couple group meals, and it wasn't a problem. It really helped when we caught the fish to do group meals.
How long did the fire ban last the entire time?
Yeah, it's still on. It's I was hoping that they'd cancel it, but Mike was saying, you know what, they're not going to present a fire ban, then close it out, and then start it again. It just confuses people. So chances are, when things got risky enough, and currently with the fires that are going on in BC, it's well, we talked about it earlier in the spring, right off the hop. Coastal BC started with a fire ban. They said, yeah, we still have fires burning from last year, simmering in the backcountry. So, like, there's certain coastal areas that went into a fire ban right away. And the Cariboo region went into a fire ban on 22nd of July or something. Or can't remember.
22nd, 23rd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's that. That was that. It did change some aspects. I did. We never used them, but I brought a really long string light. I was going to pile into the fire pit and turn on the LEDs and have them flicker.
Just to give you the effect?
Yeah, just get the effect. But we all pretty much were in bed by right after sunset every day.
Really?
So, yeah. Yeah.
Just wiped out.
Yeah, well, you know, a bunch of elderly people and so on, right?
Elderly. You're probably the youngest of the group, wouldn't you?
No, Tucson was. He was in his, I don't know how old Tucson is. He's got to be in his late 30s, early 40s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I never did ask him how old he was. He's young.
He's young.
He's a young pup.
So you got all your stuff. You got the fire ban going.
Yep.
You got all your gear, all your stuff assembled.
Yeah. So that was another, it's, you know, we did some separate shopping trips, this, that, the other thing to get ready. And it was kind of weird. It was so disjointed because I'm used to prepping at home and then driving off. So the plane really complicated things. Like I said, you couldn't bring fuel with me, and there's a lot of stuff I couldn't bring. And so,
well, it surprised me when you told me you brought your no bug zone.
I did, and we used it.
But you didn't need to bring your tent.
I brought the tent just in case because I didn't know what the full plan was, so I needed something.
Right.
So I brought a hammock, a tent, and the no-bug zone.
Holy crap.
But they didn't go on the trip with me.
No, I know, but you had to bring them on the plane.
Yeah, oh yeah. I had two. So on the way up, I had my checked-in baggage was about 47, 48 pounds a piece. Under the 50-pound limit.
Just.
And then on the way back, they were both around 49 pounds.
Okay.
With extra stuff that I had, you know, souvenirs and whatever.
And stuff.
Pottery and bought some pottery.
Ew.
At a roadside stand.
So,
yeah.
Excellent.
Oh, and I did collect rocks everywhere I went. So,
Beckett's got
I had about 5 pounds of rocks. No, Beckett's not getting my rocks.
Oh, he's not getting
they're my rocks.
My rocks. My precious.
Exactly.
Mine.
So I did have to, there's stuff that was consumed that was in the bags, and then that weight that disappeared was filled up with like pottery and rocks.
Well, it's easy if you can, I mean, if they've got a lot of the gear out there that you didn't need to bring, like full kitchen set and stuff like that.
Exactly. There wasn't a lot of that. But what made the difference, though, is so this route, generally everybody, and I didn't see anybody carrying a canoe, not even once. So this was a canoe cart route.
Mm-hmm.
And
I personally hate canoe carts.
I've never used one before.
I've used, and they are a pain in the bahookie.
So me and Mike Burns found a canoe cart on a trip one time. It was broken. It was in a bush, and it's like, oh, I guess somebody didn't like that. So I kept it.
Hey, been mine.
I still haven't fixed it. The wheels don't stay on, but I've never used a canoe cart, and it's like it was different. It was really different.
If it's a nice flat, no holes, no whatever trail, which it looked like from the pictures I've seen so far.
So, yes.
Yeah.
For the most part, they were flat, but
you're cruising down the highway.
Roots and potholes. Yeah, yeah. But there is some roots and potholes, and so a canoe on a cart just slams sideways sometimes if it drops into a hole. There's an American family that we were leapfrogging constantly, and so the dad and son, the dad was pulling, the kid was at the back, but that kid was, I don't know, 50, 60 pounds.
And he had a little kid.
He had backpack on. And a couple times when the canoe fell into a hole or jumped up on a rock, the tail end of the canoe would jump sideways. And we 10 times, I almost saw that kid launched into the woods. Like, it just grabbed him and threw him.
Well, he was there 5 minutes ago.
He wasn't helping, but he was being thrown around.
I got beat up by a canoe. You don't want that on your resume.
I was just waiting for him to go into the bushes. Like, whoa, I almost got him that time.
So, two canoes, four people.
Yes. So Mike, Rex, Tucson, and myself.
And
one of the canoes was a rental. One canoe was Snert, Mike's canoe.
Yeah. And you said the rental ones, none of the rental ones actually had yokes. They had a center four, but no exactly. yoke.
So there's the expectation you're going to use the cart. And so I every day I was like, oh, when I unload this cart, or when I unload the canoe at the end of the day, I want to get a picture because there's no yoke. It was just an extra thwart. There's three thwarts. And it's like, that's so weird.
It's like a cottage canoe.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I guess you could portage it. You could do paddles, or you could wrap parts of the middle thwart with towels or whatever to pad it. But it's like, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
When we first loaded it for the first time, I'm looking, it's like, where's the yoke?
Something's missing.
Something's not right here.
Peak months for this area are July and August, so you were in peak time.
Peak time. It was busy.
Advanced camping reservations via BC Parks are mandatory.
Correct.
Only 50 starts are permitted per day.
It's tight.
Yeah. And, yeah. So we'll get into a few. There's so many questions here of stuff that you've talked about already. Just the difference between what we're used to out here.
Oh, it's
and
so
things
different.
That happen out there. So, first day, you guys get there, you load up your canoes, it's beautiful scenery.
Yep.
You're seeing mountains, you're seeing the colored water, which you were saying, rock flower.
So, there are some mountain streams that are coming from high up in the mountains where you're going to have some rock flower where there's glaciers up there. And so the water is milky. And like in the first half of the trip, it's like, oh, it's pristine clear. You could see 20 feet down and you could see all these logs on the bottom. You can see fish flying around underneath you. And so it's just pristine clear. And then at the, I think called the Elk River. Anyways, when it flows in, there's about a third of the route that's all milky from that one river. And boy, when you're in the lakes, it's like, hey, this water's nice. So you go for a swim and do whatever. And then you find a stream that's coming in or a waterfall. You go and touch the water. It's like, that's
nice
cold.
And chilly.
Oh, my goodness. And so the Elk River that we saw, that was really white, just milky white. It was ice cold, frigid, like super cold. It hurt the ankles cold. It was like, wow.
So those people that really hate getting their feet wet.
Yes, exactly.
Went out of their way not to get their feet wet.
Tucson was a princess for that one. He had hiking boots on the whole time. And so I had to make sure he was up nice and close to shore so he didn't get his boots wet.
Water.
Hmm?
Do you guys filtered water?
Yeah.
How did you do in the milky woo?
Well, he had to do a few back flushes to clear it, and but we were careful. Like we didn't filter water when it was really milky, but on two of the lakes where we got water, it was what are you going to do? So he did have a syringe to force back flush the filter. He had a platypus, and we had a spare filter. I was carrying a spare filter with me. In case it did get clogged up. But, just quick back flush with a syringe and pushed it backwards.
It's doable.
Yeah, it was doable.
Yeah.
It worked out. It was fine. Yeah. Yeah. So, And so when we first started, like you show up at the campground. We did the first night in the car campground right at the put in. Then we had to show up for orientation. They make you watch a movie, listen to a lecture. They put the fear of everything into you. So it's like I'm listening and I'm thinking they're really hamming this up because they're just talking about how dangerous it is.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people, as I learned, there was a lot of people who go there with little experience, so they're from other countries, so they don't know that, hey, the moose are dangerous too, you know. So there's bear issues, there's deer or moose issues. We did see some deer, but well, not on the trip, but yeah, it was, we'd had to do an orientation. They talked about all the stuff and they described at length. Oh, she was really trying to put the fear into us. But anyways, they switched over. I can't remember how long ago, she said, like 15 years ago. Every campsite has multiple bear caches, like metal boxes,
right,
with hidden handles. And so you didn't have to worry about bears getting at your food. And they said there were like, you know, 5 to 15 problem bears a year, 30 mm-hmm. years ago. And now it's like very rare to have any problem bears at
good.
All.
Good.
And so the bear caches really cleaned it up. So the bears stopped learning that humans are a source of garbage food, right? So yeah, so it was interesting. We saw a few groups, the main group that we saw, and we leapfrogged them the whole trip.
So did a bunch of you all leave at the same time? Because they talk about only 50 starts a day. Or do you get a time you get to leave?
It was just whenever you show up, you leave.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no time to leaving. So we just, when we showed up, we just happened to be with the Sieberts. They're from Utah, Ohio, and California. They're all one family. Like, really nice family from the States. And so they're all engineers and stuff, a bunch of smarties. There's 14 of them in one group. So you can do, there's, when you do smaller, when, to get normal campsites, you mm-hmm. can't be more than 6 people in your group. If you're doing a group trip, there's very specific sites. You are pre-booked on a specific site, and these sites have like 6 or 8 pads, and you can, it's a group site, and you're booked onto that. You have to stay on that site.
Right.
So, and that's what the Sieberts were doing. And so we did the orientation right off the bat. You leave the parking lot, and because it's cart trail, they don't want undue damage to the trails.
Right.
Because then they have to go out and fix it, plus it's wear and tear, yada, yada, yada. So we're allowed 60 pounds in each canoe.
On the canoe cart.
On the canoe cart. It didn't include life jackets and paddles and stuff like that, but it included gear, any right. bags. So we had a little tag they attached to the handle on the front of the canoe. It said, you know, 1 yellow stuff sack, 1 green stuff sack, 1 orange stuff sack, and 60 pounds, whatever. So if anybody saw us along the way and there's like a giant canoe pack in there, it's like, no, 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 that's not, you're above your 60 pounds. Anyways, so that was that. That was orientation. And right, we left the orientation, went down, weighed our gear, and the cart trail started right there.
It's like, really?
I never even touched water until after I did my first 2.4 kilometer portage. And you'd think, hey, it's a canoe cart. This should be simple. This should be easy. It was actually hard to do.
that's why I say
because it's not... you're leaning over, pushing a canoe, and the person in the front is leaning over, pulling a canoe, and there were some steep hills too. So it wasn't that easy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And see, that's like Point Grandin when we went there.
Yeah.
Your car is right at the beginning of a portage to the lake.
I haven't even done water yet. How are you doing a portage?
But yeah, they have canoe carts there you can use.
Yeah.
And it's not as smooth as the paths you guys were on.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, this is not how. I just portaged regularly.
Yeah.
I got about 100 meters down and just. Forget this. Took the canoe cart back. Portage my stuff.
This is dumb. Yeah. Take this back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can't
even have that. Anyway, so day one was from the put-in right at the office. And so it was 2.4 kilometers. Then we did Kibby Lake, and Kibby Lake was Kibby Lake and Indian Point Lake were a little bit windy. So Kibby wasn't too bad. Then we did the 2 kilometer portage, get into Indian Point Lake. And that's where we got the first and really only wind of the whole trip, while we're on the water.
Mm-hmm.
And so the front of the canoe was like bouncing in the air and slapping down. We were bouncing off the waves. And the wind came up, and there was thunder and lightning, and it was not a heavy rain, but a medium heavy rain. And then we found our campsite, set up, put up the tarp, and so on. And so that was first day. It was like it wasn't too bad. It was right off the bat, though. It was like the weather changed so quick,
mm-hmm.
and I guess it's just because of the mountains, right? So you get on the water, you're looking up, it's like, wow, that's a mountain. There's snow on that mountain. Holy cow. Look at that. And then, oh, there's clouds. I can't see the mountain anymore. What's going on? Ooh, was that lightning? So it was like, what's going on?
Yeah, that's the mountains for you.
But throughout the whole trip, it's like, you go, it's like, oh, that looks beautiful. I'm going to get a picture of that. You take a picture, you walk back and you turn around. Oh, that's different. That looks really good. I gotta go take a picture. You go back. I took over 1,000 pictures.
Really?
Yeah. It was like, wow. This is because, and my phone was telling me about it because there's 556 pictures not backed up. It's like, oh yeah, I don't have internet. So my pictures weren't being backed up. Oops. And it was alerting me how many pictures weren't being backed up. It's like the number kept growing and growing and growing. It's like, wow, I took a lot of pictures. But you know what?
You may as well.
You point it at a mountain, take a picture, wait 5 minutes. It's a completely different picture.
Yep.
It was so wild. So it changes so fast.
So this canoe circuit is like a giant rectangle.
You
guys started in the upper left-hand corner.
Yep.
And went clockwise.
We went clockwise, correct.
So if you're looking at a map, you'll be able to just follow the route.
Yeah, if you look at the map like I am looking at it right now, you start at the Bowron Lake campground and you shoot across the gaps of trees there, Kibby Lake, Indian Point Lake, then Isaac Lake is like a L-shaped lake. And these aren't really formed like normal round lakes.
Mm-hmm.
They're at the base of mountains, so these lakes are fairly straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really wild. But you can just, everywhere you go, it's just like, oh, snow-capped mountain. Oh, snow-capped mountain. And you paddle another 100 meters, like, oh, that's a different view. Same snow-capped mountain, but different ones in the background in the gap. Man, I took so many pictures.
You may as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you don't, like, half the time I'm, like, nervously taking a picture because I don't want to drop my phone in the lake and lose it forever type thing. But, I was just quickly, I never reviewed. I just took pictures. I haven't even looked at my pictures yet. Like, I've looked at a few to show people, but I have not reviewed my pictures on a big screen yet.
Yeah, you'll need a day.
Yeah, I will. Like other people from the trip are already posting about it, but I haven't yet.
Yeah.
So.
So when you got to the campground, describe the, because they're different as well.
So that's something I've never experienced this before and they're posted as such. So on the parks map, it'll have the campsite number in a symbol. And in the upper right corner of the symbol, it'll be a 2, a 5, a 6, whatever. And the upper right corner of the symbol is the number of tent pads. Every campsite either has a raised platform or is just like logs that form a square. And so it's like a 12 by 12 square or a 12 by 12 tent pad on wood. And so if it says 6, that means there's 6 tent pads.
Right.
And on the signs at each site... For example, campsite 45, it had a little symbol 2, it had 2 tent pads. So, and the sign on the post says, campsites must be shared at all times. So every campsite is considered a group site. And you're not allowed to chase people off. No, this is my campsite. No, it's all, they're all shared campsites.
So if we were in Algonquin and we had our 2 tents set up on... Mm-hmm. On a site.
Yeah.
And then somebody else, 3 canoes come in up onto our site.
They wouldn't do that.
But there.
But there, it's like, yeah, we were joined by people constantly. Like, we got to know some people really well just because we leapfrogged. Like, anybody started within a day or two of us, we constantly saw them.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, she's dreaming. She barked in her dream.
Athena's behind us on the floor. We're hearing this little noise. She's, yeah, dreaming, chasing bunnies.
Yeah.
So people group came up.
Campsites. They're, so early on in the trip, we didn't see a lot of people early on, but towards the end, we saw a lot of people because on the final leg heading north on the last section of it, you can come in from the other direction.
Right.
But you can't, you only go so far because there's a really fast river at one point. So we saw a lot of people on that last section, people just coming in for a day trip and picnicking. And so we saw a lot of people wandering through our campsite saying, hi, how's it going? And they'd stop for shore lunch and just chat with us and whatever. So it's all shared sites and you have to share. It's the rules. So that was what I the first time or two was like, oh, this is weird. But right. Then I got used to it really quickly. It was just normal. And
yeah, that would be the biggest,
yeah,
it's a little, weirdest thing.
Yeah, culture shock there.
Yeah.
And like I said, we got to know a bunch of the people really quickly. We met Melissa and Summer, a mother-daughter team that we leapfrogged a lot of the time, stayed on the same campsites 1, 2, 3 times. Anyways, or just down the beach from them a couple times. There is a couple from the United Kingdom. Dover and Southampton. So she was here in Canada for a year. And he just came over for the summer to visit her. So she's been like, she became a lifty and stuff at Sunshine Village in the, for skiing in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so she's enjoying her year off between, university and life. So, we got to know the Sieberts. There's 14 people. Like, 7 of them were adults, 7 of them were kids of varying ages. Some of them were really young. I haven't looked her up yet, but Lynn from Edmonton. She's a YouTuber, and we constantly saw her doing videos and putting up her GoPro. So I want to find her videos now. Steve from Maple Ridge, he did the route with his stand-up paddleboard. He said it was the second time he did it. We met a bunch of other people from all over BC that were in one group. We met another group, smaller group from the States. They came up from the States. So it was just, we're constantly meeting new people. It's just this mishmash of people from, we met a couple from Latvia, did I say?
Lithuania?
Lithuania. They're both in living in, they were...
Spain.
Yeah. So both from Lithuania, they're living in Spain, and his English was really good. She didn't talk much, but they were here. They came here for this, yeah. Loop. That's what they're here for.
International, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. The Yukon couple, they after this trip, they are there now, I believe. They're up in the Yukon doing the Yukon River. This is their summer. Yeah.
Excellent.
They're enjoying their Canadian summer. So that was pretty cool.
Some of the sites also had shelters.
Yes. So there are a few ranger cabins that are locked. Mm-hmm. I saw 3 of them that are, they're just locked. They're ranger cabins. But there's also a whole bunch of shelters and cabins along the way that are just, you can use them. And they had CSA approved wood stoves, and so you could, and we did just on the Turner Creek site. It was a really big site, and so it was a really big shelter with plexiglass windows, and it was a giant shelter. And so we collected a bunch of wood and had a fire going for almost 2 days. It was rainy. We did a layover. It was a lot of rain, and so everybody hunkered down, and so that was kind of cool.
Keeps you nice and warm.
So there's quite a few shelters along the route. They also have along the route, I don't know how many, I'm going to say 5, but there's 5 marked locations with emergency radios, like solar powered radios. So if you're in a problem, you could call out on the radio. So if you're, depending on the section, if it's just below the river, there was a radio campsite 29, and it was emergency radio that if you had trouble, and there have been a few calls on them to come rescue, We saw a few canoes wrapped around logs, saw a Grumman piled into logs on the shore, saw a rental canoe wrapped around a tree in the middle of the river. There was, various gear. We saw totes and bags, and we were told, do not try and rescue the equipment. It's too dangerous to touch it. It's like, but it's a free canoe. So, but it was funny to see a canoe wrapped around a tree with a canoe cart tied to it. And it's like, are there bags in there? Free food, free gear. So, yeah, it was. So there's like five different solar powered radios. There's one at the Turner Creek cabin or shelter that we're at. Any section of the way where it looks like it would be difficult or it's isolated, there's going to be emergency radio.
Right.
Which good. Is good. It's so the Forestry Service listens to the radio as well as the park listens to that radio. So if they said if you're in an emergency and you call out and we don't hear it, chances are the Forestry Service will relay the message to us because they'll probably have heard it.
Right.
So that was good.
That's a good deal.
Yeah, it's kind of safety because they also said if you have a spot device or, an SOS device, if it's not immediately life-threatening, call with the emergency radio because the response time would be faster with them because they can just rip down through the lakes. They've got boats with outboard motors at every single point along the way. And so they just have to hit a portage, run across, take another boat, go down another lake. We saw them a few times deep into the park on motorboats. And so they said, we are very quick response if there's an emergency, but if it's life or death, hit your SOS button and call in the bigger help. But chances are they'd be quicker because with emergency services coming in from remotely, they're going to have to gear together, plan it and whatever, whereas the park staff could just jump and go.
Yeah.
So that was neat. That was comforting to know that ability was there. So that was pretty cool.
Your first day tootling along.
First day, it was hot, just a bunch of... first day was cold.
Oh, first day was cold.
That was the portage day. It rained. It was windy. The weather changed. Second day was... That was a long day. It was hot. I don't know what the temperature was, but it felt pretty darn hot. And it was about 20 kilometers on Isaac Lake. So we did a 1.6 kilometer portage, went down Isaac, clear water. It was beautiful. You saw giant snow-capped mountains, and in between mountains, you could catch glimpses of other series of mountains in the background as they fell away in the distance. And it was just breathtaking to be paddling along. It was so sunny, no wind at all. Like in most of my pictures, it's just mirror glass water. Wow. It was that first day and then the middle day on Turner Creek where we had a lot of rain and wind, and we weren't moving a lot those days anyway, so it didn't matter. But otherwise, I have so many, is that picture upside down or upside right? Oh, there's a little bit of ripple in that part, so that must be the water view, right? So it was so nice. The weather was perfect.
And so there is no portage in the first day or second day.
There was one portage, the 1.6 kilometer portage from Indian Point into Isaac.
Oh, right.
And if you're looking at the map right there, it's the Bowron Lake Camp 15. So that was there was right next to it is Ranger Cabin, but there's also the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's I think that was a group campsite. Yeah, Camp 15 is a group campsite. And but in the middle of everything, there's Ford Peak, McLeod Ridge, Mount Lesage. So it's just amazing to be surrounded. And I noted later on in the trip, it's like we're just gawking, looking at all these mountains and how beautiful it is. And like at about day five or six, I'm like, we never turn around to look behind us. It never occurred to me. It's like, we got to start turning around because we're approaching a nice view, but we're also not looking back behind us
to see
the view is behind us because everything's unique, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so then that day we went most of the way down Isaac, got to, it was at Camp 21A. Camp 21 is the group site. So that's where the group site across from us were.
Right.
So it's just so amazing there. And like, we didn't see any big animals for the first part of the trip, but we saw lots of birds, ospreys, so many osprey, like tons of osprey. and saw some ball. We were when we left the site 21A on Isaac, we just left the site. We're 10 minutes down and look up. I said, look, a bald eagle. And you could see it fluffing its feathers. And Mike goes, oh, it's gonna go. And we're looking at it, waiting to fly. And it went. It flicked its tail and like shot out 10-foot long white string of poo. It's like, whoa, that's a lot. And then it flew off. It offloaded some weight. But yeah, it was so many times, like, it's hard to get a phone out in time to take a picture. And I always keep it locked up in a pocket or something because yep. I don't want to lose it. But yeah, it was, there's so many opportunities to have gotten a nice picture, but I missed the opportunity. But yeah, it was, so that was 21A, hot and dry. Water's still clear. So that's Isaac Lake. It's beautiful.
That looks like a nice lake to go and stay on.
You can see, so it, like in the map, it looks like it's just a straight line down, but mm-hmm. it's just enough of a curve that you can't see all the way down.
Right.
And if you're looking southeast straight down that lake, there is a saddle with a glacier on it. So you can see a glacier. And that's a year round. Like you could see in this saddle is like, it looks like a mountain of snow. It's like, ooh, that looks thick.
Hmm.
And so we, all the way along, because it's mountainous, you're coming along. It's like old growth, all this old growth trees. And then just a brand new one line slash down the mountain. It's like, ooh, that's an avalanche run. So you can see where the avalanches come down because it clears out all the trees. And
right.
at the base of it is all these logs underwater. It's like, wow. It'd be really interesting to go in there in winter, like ski it or snowshoe it, and stay away from the edges because apparently there's a lot of avalanches in the winter. But if you think about it, like anywhere's in the mountains there, like, what was it? Whistler Blackcomb, Whistler Blackcomb is south of this location, right? So this location is north of Williams Lake. It was right, you know, where the vertical line of BC comes down that gets wiggly because it follows a river. So it's right about there. And so Whistler Blackcomb is south of us. They get a lot of snow, like dozens of feet a year type thing, right? Like, you know, 25, 30 feet of snow in a season. And so imagine all that snow piling up on the side of a mountain. And some of these mountains, when you're passing by, looking up, it's like the face is almost vertical and you can see mm-hmm. where it's just all fresh green trees. And it's like, oh yeah, it looks like that. This gets avalanched every year because it's just shrubs on the mountainside. And at the very top of the mountains is just rock. Nothing grows.
No.
Or high enough. So yeah, it's just so amazing to, I can't express it in words. You'd have to see pictures of it, right?
Just paddling down and seeing nothing but majestic scenery.
Exactly. It's amazing. So from there, we, so this is, what was that? Campsite 6 is 1, 21A, that was night 2. Then night 3, we ended up at a cabin below a series of, it was a portage with creeks and rivers and so on, and that's at the end of Isaac. We go down the chute and the river, but we portaged it. That was a rough portage. The canoe was, we almost lost the canoe off the side of the trail. It was just boom into a pothole, almost tipped over, and it was very rough. We were beaten up and exhausted at the end of it. It's like, I thought the car was supposed to be easy. It was not easy because it was to the point where it's like, this might be easier if I was like had this canoe on my shoulders,
right?
Yeah, it was like, oof. So because every time you hit a root or rock, you have to push it over it and kind of lift the canoe. And then then in a hole and you have to dig and push it out of the hole.
It almost feels like work.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And it's like, I don't know, like I'm taking this portage because there's rapids here that they say don't run.
Mm-hmm.
And why am I going uphill? It's like I'm going uphill and the water's going downhill. What's going on here? Is this wrong?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. We're just messing with you.
But then at the bottom of that series of water, we got back in the canoes, and as soon as you get out into the open, there's a cabin, and that was site 31. And so it was a nice cabin that we stayed at, and so you can't sleep in the cabins. So
are they for rent or
no? They are just for, they're meant to as a shelter.
Like an emergency.
An emergency shelter. There's wood stoves. Collect some wood. If you're, especially in the spring and the fall when it gets cold and so on, you need a place to get out of the elements. So we pitched the tent on the lawn. And, I should mention that too. So I brought my tent, but at the first campsite in the car campground, we all say, hey, let's see if we all fit in the one tent. And Mike has the exact same tent as my family. We have the exact same tent, bought it at sale. Nice tent, big tent. And so all four of us slept in the tent.
All four stinky men.
Yep. Yeah.
In one tent.
Yeah. Head to toe. So it was good. There's a front door and a back door. And so if you're on the edges, you're crawling over people to get out and whatever. It worked. Yep. Very little snoring. Tucson snored. They said I did, but I don't know. I didn't hear it.
Yeah. How were the bugs?
So the bugs early on weren't too bad, but as you got into the river travel and away from the open lakes, the bugs got some of the sites were pretty bad. The last two or three nights, the bugs were really bad.
So it was a good thing you had your no bug zone.
Yes. So there wasn't a lot of biting bugs, but there was enough of there was a lot of no-see-ums.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a pain in the butt because it was like you couldn't even, all you could do was wait for the pain to know that you had one on you to kill it. But on a few of the beaches, there's a lot of, on the latter part of the trip, there's a lot of beaches.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this little weird black moth. And as you walk, they all leave the beach and fly up around you. So there's like 10,000 little black moths fluttering around you, bouncing off your face. And
really?
And then there's all these other, like they weren't biting or anything. There's all these other little bugs. They were just kind of weird small bugs. And they would fly up off the beach as well. So you had these two clouds. I tried to take video of it, but it just wasn't working. But there's so many of them. It was just so weird. Anyways, we get to the bottom of this, and we pitched the tent on the lawn of the cabin. And I wasn't sleeping well, so I was tired, so I went to bed early that night. And they said, oh, yeah, last night there was two female moose and two babies out there. It's like, oh. So I missed it because I was so tired I went to bed. But, yeah, it was and on the cabin wall, there's an arrow pointing to the woods. And it said, emergency radio and campsite 29. So it's like, oh, let's go for a walk. Because there was only one place to pitch a tent by the cabin. Nothing around it in the woods. And so it's like, well, let's see what site 29 is. So we walked for, just me and Mike went. The other two stayed back at the cabin. And we got around the whole cove and almost hit the river again. Popped out and it's like, screw this. It's a barely a goat track.
Right.
And there's all these weird plants with thorns and just ripping into your skin. And it's like, nope, not doing it. So they came and paddled down and we were waving them down from the woods. They saw us pop out onto the shore and they came and rescued us. Then we looked at the map and it's like, huh, campsite 29 is like a kilometer up the river.
Ooh.
So why is there a trail? I guess it's because if there's an emergency and you get caught in the rapids, you end up at the cabin, you want to go back up the river and use the emergency radio.
Right.
I think the radio should have been at the cabin, at the bottom of the falls.
Yes.
So. You son of a gun.
next day. Oh, that was Friday already.
Yeah, so that was Isaac de McCleary site, number 31 cabin. That's where we saw the moose. I saw a beaver. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it was a beaver. It looked, had a big head on it, but we saw beaver dams and huts all along the route. So we had chili that night and went to bed. They saw the moose. The next day we made it. So from there, you go down, and this is where the Elk River shoots into the main stream. And this is where the Milky Water started, right below the cabin. Ice cold water flowing in, and it's a fast-moving river. And there's signs at the top, stay middle river. So we went down, and it was fast. It was I just steered it, and it carried us down at a very good clip. And that's where we saw canoes wrapped around logs and the Grumman dug into the side of the creek, and there's you could see various bits of debris from people crashing out. And they said, what did they say? There was three rescues in the last 2 weeks or something like that.
Wow.
And so a lot of people were getting in trouble in this section. It's fast water. And I know this because I've done a bunch of whitewater. If you're going around a turn, you got to stay on the inside of the turn because the outside of the turn pushes you into the bank. And so apparently a lot of people got in trouble doing that and flipped and lost it. And so at the very bottom of that fast river, there's a slower section, and there's an emergency radio right there off the side of the river. And then we dropped down into sort of a delta from the river. So it's very, very shallow water. Like, we could touch the bottom constantly. And so that was most of the sites, 99% of the time, it's like, oh, nice campsite. Oh, nice campsite. Soon as we enter that lake, which was Lanizi Lake, it was there was the first campsite on the right. I think it was 42 or something. We walked in just to take a look. We just run the river. Hey, stretch our legs. And there was a random canoe cart sitting there on the campsite. And in the campsite, the whole campsite, the entire width of the campsite, was a bubbling brook. Like, the whole thing. Everywhere. Right. There was water running through the campsite. And there was wooden pads built up of 6 inches above the water. But you couldn't walk anywhere without stepping in water. So it's not a dry site. It's like, ah. Nope.
Is if you're tired and you need somewhere to sleep.
If you're desperate, you've lost your canoe. You can...
That's the spot.
Yeah, so it was like, ah. So from there we went down to the Turner Creek shelter. And so far the weather's been really good, and mm-hmm. So the plan was, we had a couple layover days set into the calendar because Isaac Lake is a very long lake. If it gets windy, you're in trouble.
Right.
So just in case. And then it was great weather. And so we got to Turner Creek, and on my Zaleo, I kept checking the weather, and it said next 24 hours is going to be heavy rain, thunderstorms, and so on. So you know what? When we get to Turner Creek at the shelter, this is where we're going to stay. And so it's two sites next door to each other. There's the group site next door on the other side of the creek, and then this site, which had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or 7 tent pads, and a gigantic shelter. They had just built it, I think, just within the last decade. It's beautiful. It's timber frame, metal roof, wood stove in sort of the middle, and lots of picnic tables inside. There's plexiglass windows. So we heated that sucker up. We got the wood stove going, and the only fire we were allowed to have was in the wood stoves because of the fire ban.
Right.
But because it's a CSA-approved stove with a chimney, we were allowed to have a fire in there. And that worked out great. That was the first time we shared a site, and boy, did we share a site. So on night one, like, we just kept seeing person after person after person showing up. By the end of it, there was 6 canoes, 6 kayaks, and a stand-up paddleboard on that site. And so all the tent pads were taken, and then there was people into the woods in tents. So even off into the woods, there was, like, in clearings there, people were setting up tents. And it was quiet. Like, there's people at all the different picnic tables inside the shelter. We got the stove going. It was nice and warm. You could hear all the languages and all the voices and all the accents. You could hear it was like little bits of the whole planet was there, right? There was a German woman we met. There were some French people. I never knew if they were from France or from Quebec, but they were French for sure.
Right.
UK couple, they were there for a bit the next night. Guy from Maple Ridge on stand-up paddleboard, the YouTuber from Edmonton. So it was full, but it was quiet. And, like, we were there playing, we played cribbage till like 10:30, and just heard murmurs in the corners, and everybody's quiet, doing their own thing, reading books or playing cards. And it was a nice, relaxed evening. It was nice. I was surprised because I thought, oh, this is going to be disruptive.
With that many people.
There was a lot of people. Like, I didn't count the people, but I counted the boats.
Yeah.
And so canoes, at least two people plus per canoe. And then there was a couple two-person kayaks and a bunch of single-person kayaks. There was an Oru kayak there.
Okay.
And
It wasn't made out of metal, was it?
No, it wasn't made out of metal. So that was a nice, quiet, relaxing night. We ate at a picnic table inside the shelter. And we were protected from the wind and the rain. And it was nice. It was really, really relaxing.
Good.
And so first thing the next morning, I got up because I couldn't sleep anymore. It was just too painful. I was just laying wrong. I didn't have my Therm-a-Rest pumped up right. And so at like 4 in the morning, I went in and restoked the fire and started. I was like reading a book and whatever right by the stove. And the YouTuber woman was getting ready. I saw her making her breakfast at about 4 a.m. And she was on the water at first light. When I saw her hit the water, it was 5:01 a.m. And then she was setting up her GoPros and all that stuff. And shortly after that, the stand-up paddleboard guy, he headed out at about 5:45, and then slowly other people got up until it was the shelter was practically empty. It was who was left? There was the group that came in from the other direction. There was about 6 of them in 3 tents, and there's somebody else. Who was it? Anyways, there was very few people left, and then the American group showed up, and so there's 7 kids, 7 adults, and it got a little hectic, and it was like I really wanted to grr Americans, but this family is such a nice family. They're from little points all across the states. A lot of them are in the Sierra Nevada mountains. They're currently living, but highly educated people. Like, they're all engineers and this, that, the other thing, and smart group of people, very friendly, very nice. And so it's like, gosh darn it, I didn't want to like you guys.
There's a lot of that going around these days.
Yes, but what a nice family. They were so kind, and there's like they shared this, and we shared stuff with them, and so that was really cool. It was really nice, a really nice family. And and we had seen them so many times, orientation, then leapfrogged. We saw them on the lake, saw them at portages, chatted here, there, and everywhere. And so it was nice to get to know them. So we saw them there on site that night. That's when we first met the mother and daughter. They're from Alberta. She's a teacher as well.
Okay.
And so it's her daughter's 18, and they've been doing this mother-daughter trip. And so when they came in, when the Seabirds came in, they came in through a storm, and they were soaking wet. And so very quickly they were in there hanging stuff from the ceiling, trying to dry stuff out. It was like a Chinese laundry in there. It's like there was like tent flies and tents and sleep bags hanging up. Everything they had was soaked. And I don't think they waterproofed their packs well enough. So everything was just trying to dry it out. Then the Melissa and her daughter Summer came in, and they were even more soaked. They were like dripping. It was like, ah. So everybody was standing around the wood stove trying to warm up and dry out. And so that was about the most of the event for that day. And then everybody, you know, went to bed. Everybody was in bed early that night. Boy, oh boy, did the Seabirds, did they make big meals. I don't know who was carrying all the food, but they had a lot of food.
Should have joined in.
Oh, my goodness. They had a lot of food. They fed the mother-daughter.
There you go.
Yeah. We had our own stuff, but we had Tucson caught fish that day.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a big fish fry. Fish. I brought halloumi cheese. How do you say that? Halloumi or
halloumi?
Halloumi cheese. Yep. So I made halloumi cheese steaks. We had that with the fish. And then I think we had a side of pasta or something. Anyways, can't remember. But yeah, that was nice. everybody's like, everybody's going, can I just use that? Well, that's going to melt. You put it on the stove. We just put it on tin foil and cooked it right on the stove. I said, yeah. No.
We fry it.
Doesn't melt. You fry it. You barbecue
yep.
it.
Yep.
And so anyway, that was neat. And but boy, the Americans, they put up a feed, both the supper that night and breakfast the next morning, like pancakes and blueberry pancakes, this, that, the other thing. It's like hash browns, and it's like my clothes stunk from fried food. And I'm looking over, it's like, oh, they're having something better than me.
I just want to be on the water and go.
Well, for the most part, my breakfast was a coffee and a couple of breakfast bars, and that's
right.
It. Like, I think the first morning I had my mustard pickle wrap, but otherwise I had those Kellogg's cereal bars for breakfast. Anyways, from there, so when we're on the rain delay day in between everybody leaving and then the seabirds showing up, it was another one of those photo days, because up until then you couldn't see a lot of the mountains because of the smoke.
Right.
From the wildfires, it was constant smoke, so you could always smell smoke. And then throughout that day, that whole day at Turner Creek, the rain just kept coming down, then it'd go away, and then there'd be like booming thunder, and it's like the whole shelter was shaking, and it's like, that seemed a little close. And so it was kind of scary. It was so close a couple times, and the wind came up, and tarps were starting to blow away, and then the wind would die, and you look at the mountain, it's like, oh, got to get a picture of that. So it's like, again, every 10, 15 minutes, oh, I need another picture. Oh, look something different. New. Get another picture. So I've got so many pictures. You can see the smoke. Like, I tried to get the same angles every time I went out and took a picture just to get a comparable, and boy, did it ever change. And even again the next morning, like, it was a heavy fog socked in. You couldn't see a thing. And then by about 8:30, it's all cleared up. And it was like, wow. It's just, I took so many pictures. Anyways, so from there, from Turner Creek, which was really nice sight. Again, it had its own emergency radio and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went to Sandy Lake. So we're up early with the seabirds. Everybody's packing up and this, that, the other thing. So it was Tucson, but like I said, Tucson caught two fish that night before, so we had a fish fry. And then we saw the UK couple. They showed up just for a brief time, and then they left and went to another site. And so the next morning, we headed up. We passed the UK couple. We passed some other people. There's a dad and a son that we crisscrossed a couple times that they're out camping or paddling with us. And this is when we really started to see a lot of wildlife. This is a lot of creek and river or small lake travel. So, saw a lot of golden eagles. I've never seen a golden eagle before in my life.
Really?
So we saw, I think two. I think Mike said he saw three, but I saw at least two golden eagles.
Okay.
Huge bird.
Yep.
Massive bird, just like a bald eagle, very big bird. So we saw the bald eagles, ospreys. The osprey caught a big fish on one of those lakes as we left that day. So it was really nice just to, like, from large lake travel to small lake travel, like,
yep.
You get a little bit of everything as you go along. And some fast water, there's no white water. We never had any white water, but it was fast water on the fast portion. And then we get in that, from this point on, we're in smaller lakes. So, you know, it's, as you go up, leave Lainese, then you're a Sandy Lake, and then you're a whole bunch of smaller, tinier lakes. And, from there we got into Sandy and we stayed on a, this is where we saw the people, a bunch of people start coming in from the other direction because
right.
It's easy travel. And so again, another beach site. It's fantastic. Like every campsite we've been on, it has been nice. And so we stayed on Sandy Lake. We saw rabbits. I'm not used to seeing rabbits so far in the backcountry. We're in the mountains and there's a lot of rabbits. Saw quite a few.
Good food for the predators.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. The rabbits weren't very skittish. I got pretty close, got some photos, and he just looked at me as if, what are you? Or another human, whatever, right? So, and from... when we left Sandy up the, if you look on the map, I don't know if you're looking at it. So there's Caribou Falls near Una Lake. So that's a nice hike. And so it's a quick hike through an old fire burn. And you get up to Caribou Falls. This falls, like, do you know how, you know that Niagara Falls is eroding backwards?
Yep.
It falls back either a couple inches or a foot each year.
Yeah.
So this thing, I don't think it moves at all because it is solid granite under. So it is just this, it's probably been like that for a millennia, right? And so it comes off, do you know how you can, you see people kayaking off waterfalls?
Yep.
You can't do this one. Don't anybody do this one. Because you can see at the bottom of the falls, it hits a plate of granite. And the water shoots up again, half as high as the falls itself. So it hits down and you can see it just shoots up. And so a lot of, we got rainbow pictures and it's loud and it was, wow, what a nice, it's such a nice set of falls. And got a lot of pictures, a lot of video. We walked all the way down to the, down below the falls at the base to get some nice photos. So that was Una Lake. That was amazing there. Again, oh, and that's where we saw, that's where we saw the golden eagle, two of them.
Right.
And then another nice portage, and so the Babcock, and so we ended up at from there, Una Lake, Sandy Lake site, Spectacle Lake site number 45. So 45 is where we saw it. Oh, a huge heron. I don't remember seeing such a big heron before, but I'm used to maybe Ontario herons. Golden eagles again, eagles, bald eagles. So it was, and then we had a series of small portages, and along that stretch, it was, so we shared a site at 45 with the UK couple. There's a sandy point, and it was, again, a nice site. Eh. So I like sandy sites, but boy, you get sand in everything.
Yep.
So when I got home, I took my water shoes out, and I'd already knocked them out a few times, and took them out of the bag, and there's sand in the bag, and sand falls out on the floor in my living room. It's like, whoa.
Oh, we did a Moose River trip. Scott Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
Moose River sand.
Yeah.
I'm sure we were finding Moose River sand
and
stuff for like 2 years.
It's crazy. I know. Anyway, so we got to share the site again with Melissa and Summer, and then UK couple Summer and I can't remember the guy's name again. But we saw moose on that site, and mm-hmm. we saw fresh tracks of mama moose and two babies right on the sand, right on the point. And that was, we had rain the night before, so those tracks were very fresh. And so from from 45, we just paddled all the way out. It was a nice, curvy, like we went through a large swampy area. And every time you come to an opening in the swamp, there's mountains in the distance. And it's just so different from what I'm used to. And again, it was a calm glass flat day. But you knew you're coming back to civilization because on Bowron Lake itself, where the takeout is, as we get closer to the takeout, there's a couple of guys on jet skis and there's a boat and there's a whole bunch of people in canoes. And we saw somebody paddle up to a beach and they're throwing frisbee on the beach. And it's like, yeah, back to civilization, back to normal.
It's, well, can't say, well, yeah, people again, because there's people the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah. But chaotic. It was just, yeah, a little bit chaotic. So that was nice that we got to the takeout, returned the gear, and then it was just a couple of days of sightseeing and touring around. It was really nice. So do you know how we have, like, in New Brunswick, there's King's Landing, and then there's Upper Canada Village. It's like the 1800s role players in these villages. You get a sense of the history. So we went to Barkerville, and this is an old mining town, and I think it only got saved because people lived there until the mid-70s, early 70s.
Right.
And so by that time, a lot of these towns were being made into tourist attractions. So this tourist attraction got saved because people lived there until the 70s. And so it's an amazing town. It's a gold rush town. This is one of the first BC gold rush towns. Somebody found, we did the math, and basically in one pan they found, like, I don't know, a couple pounds of gold. And it's like the biggest pan of gold in history. It's a record-breaking pan of gold. And in today's money, it was $480,000 in gold that they just pulled up out of the creek right there.
Really?
In one day.
Hmm.
And when word got out,
everybody showed up.
Gold fever.
Yeah.
Like, well, there's a blacksmith in town. I've got a few items from him that went in, obviously went in my check baggage because that could be stabbiness. But he said, yeah, there was like a couple dozen blacksmiths in town, over 100 smiths, and they were going 24 hours a day. He said there was that much work making tools for all of the miners, just constantly fixing or making tools. And I was like, wow. And so there's a little Chinatown. When we first left, we set up camp, went in for supper, and we went to the restaurant in town and had Chinese food for supper. And next morning we went to Wake Up Jake's and had breakfast. Great food. The campground that we went to. So when we showed up, there's no office, just a wandering person with a truck that you'd paid.
Oh.
And so we took a non-reserve site, and in BC, all the showers are paid. So it takes a loonie for 4 minutes. So it's like, well, I don't have money. You have money? I don't have money. Well, I got a toonie in the car. It's like, well, that's no good. It only takes loonies. So we went and looked at showers, and it's like, they're a little worn down, had seen better days. And so we looked in, there's three of them. So when the woman came around, it's like, yeah, I paid for the site, and I got like $20 in loonies. And 4 minutes for a shower, one loonie, it was plenty.
Really?
But anyways, we went up to the showers. Rex took the middle one. I took the big one because it looked the scungiest. I thought, I'll take the scungy one. And then Mike took the smaller one on the end. And I forgot my soap, wandered back to the campsite. And it's like, well, that's very bold of Michael to shower with the door open. His door wide open. I could see the shower. I could hear the shower running. The curtain's closed. And it's like, oh, wow, that's brave. Went back, got the soap. Took my shower. When I left my shower, he was finishing up, and I said, that's pretty bold of you to shower with the door. You don't have a door. There was no door in a shower. And I'm like, I felt so like a jerk. I went and took the other shower. He said, yeah, you took the big one. I said, it was the dirtiest one. I thought I was being nice. He had the one with no door. It was in service. It wasn't out of service. It was fully in service shower with no door.
But it's not like everybody could look
in. No, it was facing the woods, and it was in the non-reservable section of the campground, so there wasn't too many people there. And it was like, at first I'm thinking, that's awful for you, bold of Mike. And then it's like, you don't have a door.
Oops.
So anyways, that was that night. Next morning, we wandered through Barkville. It was an amazing town. It was just like a lot of the stuff, like you see, like, you know, there was there's the Statesman, the Caribou Statesman or whatever, the newspaper. And so we learned about everything from the 1800s, right? It's an amazing town. If you ever get to go to that area, you got to go to Barkerville. It's very interesting. They all play a part. Miners wandering through town carrying their pickaxes and whatever, and
right,
everybody playing the part. And so it was very cool. And then from there, it was back home. Both there and back, we had to divert on side roads for a longer distance because there was a Clinton fire. So there's a whole highway that was shut down because of the wildfires. And then we went back. I did some stand-up paddleboarding while we're there. So on the first front end, there was the Rib Fest. When we came back from camping, they're in the middle of Peach Fest. And Peach Fest is a week-long event. Like, it's like, you name it, there's stuff going on. There's art this and peaches that and cooking this and whatever. Anyway, so on the Friday night, we went to, there was a, was it Def Leppard and
Van Halen.
Van Halen cover bands. And so before that, we set up our chairs, went for dinner. While we're having dinner, that's the day that the Peachland and Summerland fire started. So we could see the smoke rolling across the lake disappeared. There was so much smoke, and we're on the patio. There was like soot and burnt tree bits falling on our food. It Ooh. Was so Tucson goes, "What's that?" And I look over it. It looked like there was this weird bug on his plate. And when we look closer, it's like, that's a bit of a burnt tree. It just landed. So it's like, it was a very fast, very quick, very hot fire. High winds. It was just blowing it, carrying it. While we were there eating, we heard phones going off for evacuation alerts. And when we were watching the concert, like we're like 10 minutes south, 15 minutes south of Summerland.
Right.
And so while we're, it felt kind of weird that we're at a concert and watching the band play, listening to music, and all around us periodically you heard phones, that emergency alert, wah, wah, you know? And that night I got like 5 different alerts on my phone. And you could see people's screens lighting up over here, there, and everywhere as alerts were coming in to evacuate. But it wasn't us that had to evacuate. It was the town 10 minutes north of us, right?
Yeah.
We were in Summerland when we were stand-up paddleboarding. So that was that close. We were just a hop, skip, and a jump away. So, yeah, and we could smell it. I had soot landing in my hair and on my clothes. And you could smell. So you know the smell of a forest fire,
mm-hmm.
and you know the smell of a house fire. So periodically it's like, oh, that's a tree burning. Oh, no, I think I smell a house burning. So the rubber, the electrical, the shingles and whatever. So unfortunately, quite a few people did lose livestock and homes and stuff like that. When they evacuated, you're not allowed to take – you could take your pets, but you weren't allowed to take livestock. They wouldn't allow you to – load a trailer and leave. There were people that it advanced so far that they had to lift 55 people out of a small area because they got surrounded by fire and they could only be taken out by helicopter.
Happens fast.
It was so quick. And so the next morning when we got up to do whatever, like there was like black snow everywhere. It's covering his car. There was soot everywhere. And so anyways, we finished out, we drove around and saw smoke and saw some more smoke, and we went over this way and saw smoke and over that way and saw smoke, and there's a whole bunch, like the streets were filling up with motorhomes and tow behinds. There was whoever was evacuated, suddenly Penticton was overrun with campers.
And on now every everybody's
street
getting out
and side
there.
Street, living off of their campers, and so it was. Yeah, it was. But it was. I got to see quite a bit. It was a really good trip, and I got extended on the back end a bit. But it was a fantastic trip. And unfortunately, it's kind of clouded by no pun intended. It's kind of clouded by the fact that there's wildfires and people were losing their homes and so on.
Yeah, you never want to see
that. Mm-hmm.
But you had a good trip. You loved it out
fantastic.
There. You go back?
Oh, yeah. I want to go back. And Mike said, yeah, he wants to have me back again. He says, do another trip. And, of course, he does because I'm adorable. And but, yeah, I definitely want – I'd love to go out again and do something similar. I would like to get the kids out, the wife and kids out, to see the Bow Run canoe circuit.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, yeah, I want to do something else out in that area. It's such a lovely area. Such a lovely place to be.
Anything you'd do different?
Try not to fly during wildfire season.
Highlight of the trip.
It's really hard to say. It was all really good. It was, I can't say that there's any single highlight. I'm excited I got to stand on a stand-up paddleboard. And, boy, the cramps in my feet were so bad. But But that was fun. I say one thing, one theme through the whole thing that was fantastic was the people. Like, a lot of really nice people. And Farah, Mike's dog. What a nice dog that is. Like, I'm just blown away. Like, this dog would just come up and push her back into you and snug with you and sleep at your feet. And the dog is a snuggly dog, a snuggle dog. And again, like I said it earlier, it's like I heard that dog bark once. And a dog barked because we were on a dog beach and two dogs got in a fight. After the fight was broken up, she looked over and gave one bark. And that was it. As if to say, smarten up, guys.
Next week's show, we'll be talking about Derek's new dog.
I know. Oh, this was such a nice dog. She's such a little treat to have gotten to know. So it was, yeah. So I guess Farah would be the highlight of the trip. What a beautiful dog.
And I'm sure the low light was trying to get home.
Yes, there was that. And so there was flight restrictions in place. So as it turns out, there was flight restrictions at Pearson. So that was, I got like 20 plus different emails from Air Canada. My first flight out was 11 p.m. on Saturday. And then I got notification that it was canceled due to ground restrictions in Pearson. I don't know what was going on there. But we drove to the airport anyways, and I stayed in Kelowna because I didn't know what the situation was going to be on the ground.
Right.
So we had to take four service roads because the main highway was closed at Summerlin because the fire jumped the highway. Anyway, so we took four service roads. It turned a one-hour trip or 50-minute trip into a two-hour trip. And rocky, bumpy Forest Service Road. And so got into Kelowna. He dropped me off at a hotel and because my flight was canceled. Next morning, I went to the airport and my 9:30 flight turned into a 13:20 flight. 13:20 flight turned into a 13:55 flight. And then there was conflicting information. The gate attendant said, flight canceled. The email said, 16:30 flight. It's like, oh, it says delayed. No, it's canceled. But I said, I want an electronic version. Are you guys going to push an electronic version out? I'm not going anywhere. But a bunch of people did leave. And so because there was confusion, they sent all our bags back out. And so they're out there on the carousel. And then they said, oh, the flight's back on. It's like, oh, a bunch of people already left the airport.
That means you might get a seat to yourself.
I know. So I was thinking, it's like, oh, the plane's going to be half empty now because a whole bunch of people left. But most of the people came back. And so we were waiting for 16:30 to come around. And then they said, no, flight's canceled. It's like, oh. So I called. Before that, I had called a hotel. I said, yeah, you got a room? Yeah, you can have your old room back. Excellent. I want my old room back. And then they said, flight's not canceled. And I thought, I'm not going to call the hotel just yet to cancel my hotel room. And it's a good thing I didn't because the hotel did fill up because there's a lot of evacuees, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then they said, okay, the flight's at 11 o'clock tomorrow. And then I went to the gate. I said, okay, well, I got to get my luggage because I had gone out, rechecked in my baggage, went through security a second time. And then they said, no, it really is canceled this time. And then I went back out, collected my luggage a second time, so a 9-kilometer cab ride, $30.
Wow.
And then because so many people had their flights canceled, Uber was like, what do they call it? When things speed up, there's high demand.
Surge pricing.
So there was surge pricing. So the Uber was $42. So fine, I'll do a $30 cab ride. So I went back to the hotel for a second night, $220 bucks a night. There was a nice sushi place next door. So I had sushi both nights. I was happy.
But eventually.
Eventually.
Your butt ended up on an airplane.
Yes. So the flight confirmation said 11. They said, no, it's 10:45. I said, well, I don't know what's wrong with you guys, but nobody can agree on anything. Anyways, I finally got on the flight. And everybody on the flight had been canceled or delayed since Saturday night. So everybody was like, you'd think people would be grumpy, but no, everybody was excited. I'm flying.
And away we go. Yes.
It was, and so all across Canada, there's cloud. If you look on any of this smoke.ca or yep. firesmoke.ca or anything, it's so we pulled out of Kelowna in stratified smoky air. And when you got up just above the clouds, you could see all these puffy clouds sitting on top of gray smoke. It's just a field of gray smoke with, it looks like ice cubes in a glass. And that was like that pretty much all the way across Canada. And we started to come back down into the smoke in Ontario because there's forest fires in Ontario. And it was just weird to have a mixture of clouds and smoke. And anyways, finally got landed, got all my stuff. And yeah, it was the last, I'm exhausted from the last 3 days because.
Doing the canoe trip through the mountains with nothing.
Exactly.
It was those last 3 days.
Just stay away from airports.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you had a great time.
It was good. It was really good. It was a lot of surprises. Like I thought I was going to see more animals. I got to meet a lot of really nice people. I got to meet a really friendly dog.
And the way the campsites are.
Yeah, that was different. Group campsites. It was like there's large group reservation campsites and then, hey, anything goes campsite because there's so many pads, right? So that was different.
Weird.
And pay for your showers at a provincial campground. Why am I paying for a shower? I'm just used to Ontario. But then again, the campsites were $27 a night. Here, they're like $35 a night. So I guess that's why the showers are free.
Right.
So yeah, but it was good. It was very memorable. And I definitely would do it again. Want to bring family out there.
You got to drive next time and hit spots along the way.
So, yes, absolutely. That's what we want to do. We've talked about this. It's yep. like we need 3 weeks. We drive out there because you could do it in like 3 days if you take it easy or 4 days, take it easy and be out there for a week or two and then make your way back. And
mm-hmm.
So it's I think I'd like to do that.
It's doable.
Yeah.
Guess how I know.
Absolutely. Oh, you've done it. You did it on Canada's 150th in 2017.
And just had a nice few weeks and drove out back.
Yeah.
Hit different spots to paddle on the way.
Exactly.
It's beauty.
I wasn't supposed to talk this long. It's been an hour 30.
Yeah. It was a good trip, dude.
It was fantastic. It was so good. It was, there's so many high points that I couldn't really pick one except for that really nice dog.
Yeah. Really nice dog. I went all the way out for this fantastic canoe trip. And then a dog.
Yeah. Farah the dog. And she was a rescue. Right?
Good.
Yeah. In Merritt, somebody had a 54 dogs on and they got them all taken away. And this was one of them. And she's not food focused. She's friendly. She's quiet. She's snuggly. It's not what you expect out of a rescue. Your dog doesn't stop barking every time I come to the door.
Trying to get you to leave. Alrighty.
Yes.
Anything else to add to all this?
No, nothing. I talked long enough as it is. My voice is getting raw.
All right. Well,
I normally don't talk this much during a podcast.
Right?
It's your job to talk. I just add color. I usually fall asleep about five times when we record. We're all.
Well, great to have you back.
Yeah, I'm glad I made it back, stupid Air Canada.
If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or you can download and stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. And you can go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. And we are going to throw some of your photos and stuff up on our social so people can see them.
I'm going to throw some up there. I got to go through the first and look at them first.
See you next week.
I have 1,000 pictures to look through.
Right? I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.